This podcast is brought to you by ORCHSE Strategies, an industry leader in developing innovative, sustainable approaches for protecting workers and the environment. And a big thank you for their sponsorship to the Pre-Accident Podcast. ORCHSE's main focus and passion is in fostering EH&S performance excellence in all their companies. When members participate in one or more of ORCHSE's 9 different specialized networks, or if they engage in one of their task force or working groups, something very special happens. The sharing of ideas frequently results in cutting-edge solutions that have practical applications immediately. For example, ORC has been at the forefront of efforts to create new approaches for fatal and serious injury prevention and has helped plan, conduct, and create conferences on human and organizational performance. If you're interested in learning more about the unique opportunities available through ORCHSE, please contact our buddy Linda Haney at 202-510-0509. Or if you'd rather pop her an email, it's linda.haney, L-I-N-D-A dot H-A-N-E-Y, at ORCHSE.com. Now, let's listen to the podcast.
Where am I killing you? Sit your microphone. Sit by your microphone. I'm going to tell you.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking about calling this podcast Pre-Job Boxers or Briefs. What do you think?
Pre-Job Boxers or Briefs?
Yeah.
Yeah, I might have to sleep on that. Maybe that sounds wrong, too. I don't know. I'm good with that. Boxers or Briefs.
Pre-Job Boxers or Briefs.
Exactly.
Okay, sounds good. Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Pre-Accident Podcast. I'm your host, temporary host. They actually brought me in special for this. The regular guy is out at Bluegrass Summer Camp. So if you know what that means, you'll know exactly what I'm saying. So I'm going to sit in for him. My name's Todd Conklin. I don't know what I'm doing, so I'll just mix some stuff up as we progress. Things are great. I mean, I can't even tell you. Best weekend ever. Amazing. Got the new outdoor TV set up. Sitting out on the lounge chair, the Lazy Boy outdoor lounge chairs. Don't get me wrong. I don't have inside furniture outside. I mean, this is outside furniture. Watching TV and just enjoying the weekend. And out of it came a podcast. Oddly, but true, a podcast. And it's almost entirely going to focus on this notion of pre-job learning, pre-job briefing, job hazard assessments, job safety assessments. They got lots of names. All of them are super important, because all of them create an opportunity for us to talk about the work before we do the work. Now, you've heard me say this before, but workers really have two different types of time they manage. They have time to think and time to do. And a pre-job brief really allows the workers the time to think before they have to go out and do. And to do this, I tapped Mark Yeston, because why wouldn't you? He's one of the foremost experts in the whole country on pre-job briefs for emergent activities. That's right what we do. I mean, that's kind of a fancy pants word for it. It's also a really good opportunity for you to hear kind of what Mark's doing now, which is actually going out into the world and working with companies and crews to actually look at and modify their existing JSA, JHA pre-job so that it can be really a tool to create capacity by which the company can then go out and safely perform high-risk tasks. It's simple as pie. I mean, it sounds a little complex when I say it that way, but it's simple as pie. You will love this podcast. Seriously. In fact, pause right now. Go and get some popcorn. And then come back. Kick one shoe off. Not two. That's weird. Kick one shoe off and just sit back and relax and listen carefully as we do a whole podcast around the idea of why pre-job briefs exist, what pre-job briefs are meant to do, what they've drifted to doing, and then what a really good pre-job brief looks like. Hold on, because at the end of this podcast, kind of what Mark gives us is in a way sort of the answer. But remember, the answer lies not in you giving your workers a good pre-job brief format. The answer lies in the workers creating the right tool for them to actually successfully give them time to think about the work they're going to do. I won't talk much longer, although I could go on a long time. Let me shut up and just put Mark on the hooter here, and we'll listen to what Mark has to say in a nice conversation around pre-job briefs. I'll talk to you on the other side. Listen carefully. Here it comes. So practice sounding like $1 million.
I just have to shake your M&M machine and wear $1 million worth of quarters, I think.
Do you think there's that many in there?
I think over the long haul there has been already.
That's a lot of money in M&Ms.
I mean, there's been some recycling. When you used to not have the key as well hidden, it was much easier to recycle. But...
Well, you know, the key got broken off, and I had to drill the lock out.
Oh, no.
And put a new M&M lock on the vending machine.
Those are hard to get.
Oh, no, actually, it was that actually was stunningly easy. In fact, it was on Amazon Prime.
Really?
Yeah, and it cost like $2. And you basically, I'd never drilled the lock. Have you ever drilled the lockout? You probably have. You had that kind of job.
I have.
So I actually found that to be incredibly, almost frighteningly easy to do, too.
Yeah, just, you know, increasing diameter drill bits until the whole thing falls off in your hand.
Yeah, basically, that's exactly what happens. Yeah. It's kind of crazy. And then you're off to the races once you get the lockout. I mean, it's easy peasy after that.
Payoff, peanut M&Ms.
Yes, you got not unlimited. It's limited, but you don't want to live in a world with unlimited M&Ms.
No, that'd be over the top.
So you're doing a lot of work with pre-job, post-job. What's important about pre-job, post-job? Why should anybody care about that? I mean, we do them, I think, because they're cursory. We have to do them. They're weaponized. If we don't do them, that's used against us.
Yeah.
But do they have any, are they worth it? Do they have any power?
Yeah, I think they do in some cases. But like you just mentioned, I think they can go through a cycle. And so, you know, in anything we're going to set out to do, you know, simple task to complex task, handful of people to a whole bunch of interdisciplinary people, you have to have, you know, the written procedures, the work as imagined, the work as simulated, that black line kind of stuff. But as you get closer and closer and closer to the work, and I'm talking, you know, minutes from actually doing the work, we still have these, you know, prescribed pre-job setups in some cases. And when I talk to a lot of workers who use these things, and I'm a big advocate for having some pre-job discussion for sure.
How come? I mean, what's the point of a pre-job discussion, in your opinion? I mean, based on your background.
In my opinion, our culture, our practices, our norms, our regulatory constraints take us pretty darn close to the tip of the spear or the spinning blade or whatever you want to call it when we're actually about there to go do the things. But that space between where work is imagined and work as it actually occurs, you know, before we actually put our hands on something, is really important. And there's a lot of good stuff that goes on there, and it mostly goes on kind of organically at the worker level. And so what you see is organizations that, you know, have really formalized their pre-job stuff, which I think is laudable, do so sometimes at the expense of taking some of the, you know, organic and very real discussions that happen with workers as they're right about to interface with the work.
So what's their point for doing pre-jobs? Why do we do pre-jobs?
Well, it's reconcile a common vision of the work that's about to take place. To try to recognize any hazards that we need to put some, you know, defenses or capacity in place to manage.
Okay, that's two, and kind of controversial to me.
Yeah, and I think really importantly, it's kind of that last time before the work actually commences to really have a quick discussion about, you know, do we have the resources to do this? Do we need to, you know, stop and bring in more people? Is, you know, I mean, just think of the scenario. Is traffic control okay, or is it a lockout tagout okay, or has something changed in the situation? But what you find again and again is that when you talk to workers who've been doing this for a long, long time, many of them almost kind of did this, you know, organically before it was formalized. You know, they had their own ways of talking about the work right before they commenced it, you know, talking to the apprentice people or the more junior people on the team, kind of a, you know, top-down sort of thing. And of course, management recognizes that, you know, these are valuable things and that they also connect with some of the regulatory requirements, you know, OSHA and others. And so they formalized the tool. And so kind of a natural evolution of formal pre-job work goes from, you know, worker tool, where the worker had a lot of say in using the tool and the discussions they were having, to a bureaucratic tool, because once people have adopted something and are using it, then it's right for others to come in and say, you know, this would also be a great place to have this discussion, or this would be a great place to assure that we check off, you know, some of the OSHA requirements and things. And so it goes from, you know, a few questions to a number of questions to a checklist. And then ultimately, if we're not careful, the whole process becomes, you know, what I like to call weaponized. And when you talk to a lot of workers, they go through these, you know, formalized pre-work documents, and then they come to a point where they sign it and they realize that if anything goes not according to this plan, this is going to be the first thing that they pull out to hold us to. You know, this is our representation of our understanding of what we're about to do. And if it doesn't go like we've said here, that can be used against us. And I think that's important to be sensitive to because, you know, the idea is that we're trying to give the workers a really, really good tool to stay safe and to communicate as the work progresses. And we can stifle some of that if we, you know, weaponize it or we make it feel like, you know, I'm signing a contract that my vision of the work is what's going to take place, and then I'm going to own any deviation from that work, and it's going to be my fault if it doesn't work out well.
It seems completely counterintuitive that they would actually use that retrospectively against the work. Why do you think it got there? I mean, what made it do that?
Well, I think if you look at the most lively documentation you have when you're interfacing with any work, it's going to be, you know, some permutation of that pre-job instrument. For lack of a better description, even though they might be relevant, you know, the other rules and procedures and things we do are kind of by definition stale. I mean, they were probably written by committee or handed down, you know, through policy or regulation months, sometimes years, maybe even sometimes decades ago. Those are just kind of normal practices that, you know, are kind of universal to almost any job in a given discipline. But that pre-job discussion, which is often just a discussion and not so much a documented thing that happens as the workers are having to adapt to the work as it faces them, is what I think keeps people super safe and also adds to team cohesion. And even though it's not documented on a piece of paper, I think it's that information that makes for the most interesting stories for leaders and managers to hear.
So how do you capture that information? What do you do to make that information come alive?
That's the tough part because, you know, the work that they're doing. So, you know, I was recently out with some power linemen, and they do fantastic work. I mean, they're really amazing to deal with. And they
were they from Wichita?
No, these folks were from Georgia.
So they weren't the Wichita linemen.
They were not the Wichita linemen, but I have to say that song was going through my head all the time. and maybe it's going to be replaced by this new movie that's coming out with John Travolta.
The John Travolta linemen.
Yes.
Saturday Night Linemen.
I hope it goes well.
Yeah, that'd be good. So go ahead. I interrupt.
There may or may not be dancing, but, you know. But
if John Travolta's in it, there's going to be dancing.
There's got to be.
Let's just go with that. Okay,
dancing.
There's going to be dancing. Linemen dancing, which is kind of like line dancing, just add a person in there. Line person dancing.
Hopefully there won't be a violent, you know, cardiac syringe insertion.
Yeah. You're really pulling up on Travolta now. So, okay, I interrupted.
And I forgot where I was.
Well, the question that I'm pushing you is, so how does a company make it so if the pre-job briefing is important because it makes team cohesion, it creates an opportunity to talk about the work before you actually do the work. I mean, ultimately what I think a pre-job does, and I could be wrong, but it sort of builds capacity. So I mean, one of the ways we could look at this is that planning is important, but plans are insufficient.
Yeah, and I think a good pre-job that relies on, you know, previously conceived plans can be a great thing, and often is a great thing because it came from not just the regulatory, you know, requirements and stuff like that, but it came from experience. And so a good pre-job model, a good discussion covers some of the hazards and things that were uncovered in previous operations that were effectively communicated, you know, out of the group. And that's super useful information, but it can become stale. And if you ask any group of workers who are doing high-value, high-consequence work, if their job planning is done once their signatures have been affixed to the pre-job briefing, they'll look at you like you're crazy. Because the actual planning and the actual, you know, micro-planning, moment-to-moment adjustment that needs to happen in the work, you know, from the perspective of standing on the ground to the perspective of being up the ladder or in the bucket truck, I mean, things just change. And then they have those fantastic organic discussions where they're saying, hey, you know, I think what we were just talking about might not work in this situation. I think we need to kind of improvise something else or come up with another thing. And that's where a whole bunch of really good information happens. And if the pre-job, post-job stuff is too brittle, if the needle's not hollow, then that information is not getting back out to the organization. It's not getting up to the leaders and managers who can understand how, you know, work is constantly changing for these folks.
Which is why they probably want to document and record everything, right? My guess is the reason we got into documentation, well, I won't be naive. I mean, I think liability plays in that.
Of course. If you didn't write it, you didn't do it.
Right. So, but that aside, I think we document in order to somehow create knowledge transference, right? We can move this knowledge from one job to the next job. Which I'm not sure is the purpose of a pre-job. I mean, I would just question, Is it a knowledge management tool, or is it a work formality tool?
I kind of think of it as like, you know, the conclusion of the pre-job right before the work happens is that step where you're casting the ropes off of the vessel and pulling away from the marina. You know, you've done all of your planning, you've done all your thought, you've done your discussions. Are we truly ready to go on this? And then you cast the ropes off and you're, you know, in some way committed to actually beginning the work. But then you get out there and things often change a little bit. And what I fear sometimes is I think that really, really good information that begins or occurs after the formal document has been signed and the agreement to work has happened doesn't get filtered back into the organization and back into the other workers except for that isolated team. And that's just a loss because there's tremendous information that comes out of that.
So how do we break that? I mean, how do we create it so it does do knowledge transference?
Well, I think we assure people and let them know that, you know, deviation, if you want to use that word, and I'll use it at first because deviation sounds bad, you know, that if we recognize that sometimes you are going to be encountered with things, no matter how much effort we put into imagining how the work is going to go, there are going to be some situations that cause you to adjust from the plan. And those could be and often are retrospectively called deviations. But I want to give people space to think that, you know, a deviation, you know, by another word is an adaptation. And an adaptation is just how we advance, you know, intellectually and otherwise as a species and as a culture. And if you don't capture that information and share it out, then you're kind of stifling, you know, growth and the ability to do good and safe work elsewhere.
So is problem solving a deviation?
I think it depends on how you look at it. I think that we would pretty much still be, you know, sewing our own clothes and feeding the horses every day if it wasn't for, you know, people deviating from the norm. So, I mean, deviation is what causes us to move forward. Deviation is not necessarily a bad thing. In the context of, you know, I must deviate from what was envisioned for me or by me to actually get something done in a newer and better way, that's innovation.
Can the pre-job predict deviation?
It might be able to predict some situations where the knowables or the you know, uncommon thing that's, you know, a particular part of this particular job, then yeah, I think so.
What's your feeling on putting your stop work criteria in your pre-job? So you negotiate stop work actually as a part of the pre-job before you do the work. What do you think about that?
I think that's an ongoing process, and I think it really can hang its hat on good, you know, pre-job discussions. And allowing each team member to know that they have the opportunity to call a stop work or to pre-identify the things that are going to cause a stop work and to empower everyone, the most junior to the most senior person on the team, to be able to, you know, shut things down if they're not going well or pause for a constructive conversation, which might only take 10 or 15 seconds to make a work adjustment that can, you know, get everybody home safer and better.
So what's good look like? I mean, you've done this your whole career. In fact, you guys really probably were quite effective at your pre-job briefs, I would guess. I mean, tell me if I could be wrong. I've been wrong before, seriously.
The first place you see what good looks like is in the eyebrows of your most junior team member. So the person who's sitting there listening to the description that the more senior and more experienced, you know, pros are discussing, and then you can kind of see that more junior person has heard something that strikes them as not right or maybe needs some revision, and it will show up first in their facial expression.
And then the next thing is a little puddle of pee on the chair?
Yeah. There's that. Yeah, we usually don't discover that until every other Tuesday, but, you know, I want that eyebrow to then be followed by, you know, some moving lips and some discussion.
How do you make that discussion? Because, I mean, I think I don't think we see pre-jobs as discussion times. I think we see them as signature times. I could be wrong.
Yeah, well, and I've seen different teams do it. I've seen other teams who take, you know, workers own this stuff, or, you know, they own it initially, and then it can sometimes get bureaucratized and become less of a, you know, worker-owned thing. But then some work units take that bureaucratized version, for lack of a better term, and then re-own it. I watched one crew that would go through that briefing, you know, pre-job, and then every time they had an interruption because of weather or arrest or a reconfiguration because of traffic or something, they pulled that piece of paper out and gave it a fresh look and made some new notes. And I think that way they were making really effective use of it because they were taking what could be a stale document or process and blowing some life into it and saying, we're going to use it in this way. And so, it's a great way to use that tool.
So what's good look like? What's necessary to be – like what is – I don't know. What's the minimum standard – no, that's a crappy way to ask that question. What are the best pre-jobs look like in your opinion?
A good pre-job is you know, I think the pre-job can kind of end. Like this is, you know, here's our form, here's our regulatory requirement, here's our crew requirement, here's our brief discussion about, you know, crew fitness, equipment, PPE, you know, what we know of the job. That's great. But then that's when, you know, everybody climbs in the truck and goes off to work or gets in the helicopter and flies off to the incident. And it's from that point on the discussions that really impact, you know, how things go occur.
Are pre-job briefs like pre-flight checklists? Are those different? Because I think we want to make them the same, but I'm not sure they are.
Yeah. So, you know, I would not, you know, I'm a pilot. I fly. I would not fly without a checklist. My checklist is pretty much memorized for the simple aircraft that I fly, but I still go back to that piece of paper. But it's, you know, that's a human-machine interface thing where the machine is pretty much predictable and I as the human am the, you know, the weak spot in that equation. And so if I run through the checklist, I've made sure that all of my interfaces with the machine are, you know, on board. But when we're talking about, you know, groups of people, you know, 2, 3 people, 5 people, 10 people interfacing with some sort of multifaceted work that's going on, that's not really a human machine interface anymore. And a checklist can only take us to a certain point. And then it's a matter of people like hollering over their shoulders, like, this ain't going to work. Or these wires are closer together than I thought, or it didn't look like this from the street. And that's where that adaptation and, frankly, sometimes that deviation takes place to get the job done.
So really, a pre-job brief is not a control. It's not a defense. It's not a barrier in the classic sort of safety. It's not like a fall protection harness.
Right.
It's a prevention tool. And it really creates intellectual capacity, intellectual space to talk about the job before you actually perform the job. Fair?
Yeah. So if I was going to invent the perfect pre-job,
that's what I'm asking.
It would be a piece of paper, and then as you flip through the pages or got to the bottom of the page, that page would become more and more transparent. And it would be more and more transparent to the people you were actually on the job site with. And I think that's where a little bit of the disconnect happens. We finish signing the bureaucratic document, and maybe that's, you know, caused some really constructive conversation or caused team members to have some critical thought about what's about to happen.
See, I would push you. I think the dumbest thing to have on a pre-job is a pre-selected list of hazards that you tick. You know, like you got a list of electrical, pressure.
Right. Well, I've seen that more.
And you see it a lot.
I see it a lot.
But I'm not sure what that does, really.
Well, that's kind of goes back to the first step of, you know, does the organic work or tool, like how people go about doing business at the beginning of the day or the beginning of the project, get bureaucratized? And then those do become kind of checklisty, but more along the lines of compliance. You know,
but I think the idea, and correct me if you think that's wrong, but I think the idea was to actually simplify the process so it was easier for the worker in the field to be more effective.
To make sure that they considered all the things that
right.
needed to be considered, to stay within compliance.
But in fact, it's kind of limiting. I mean, it certainly limits conversation and dialogue because you don't really have to dialogue too
right,
much.
Right, because if you see that as the end point,
right.
So I think, you know, any – The last sentence on any pre-job thing, and I didn't invent this. This comes from, you know, Wyke and Sutcliffe about, you know, now talk to me. You know, these are our best laid plans. This is where all of our JHAs, our procedures, our regulatory things, the tool that, you know, management has given us to, you know, perform the work and check it off. That's taken us right here to this point where we're about to actually start interfacing with the work. Now talk to me. Does this plan make sense?
And that discussion is really where that capacity is created.
That's where it happens and is adjusted multiple times a day. No job ever goes as foreseen.
Right.
Going to the convenience store never goes as foreseen. Usually nothing happens of serious consequence, but our human capacity to visualize and run a simulation on what the future is going to be never tracks or comports with what the future actually turns out to be. And it usually has no consequence.
And that's the notion of adaption. So workers, we really rely on workers adaptively solving problems in order to get work done safely and reliably. We get that,
yes.
Right? And that sort of is beyond the ability to plan for.
Yes.
So that's super planning. No, it's just about, it's just beyond planning. So plan. I think of it like this. If you're driving someplace new and you turn your phone on and you get the GPS out, you don't look at the phone while you're driving, even though the phone is directly, absolutely a map of where you're supposed to go.
Right.
You have to look out the windshield because looking at the phone, although it's accurate and correct and effective and tells you how long, it's not enough information to actually drive the car. Because the GPS can't tell you if a dog runs out in front of the car.
Right.
Right. But it can tell you that you're on the right path and in 200 feet you're going to turn left.
Exactly.
Yeah, but, so what's the difference then between that and a pre-job?
I think the pre-job is like the map.
Okay.
The pre-job is the best conception using the knowledge that the organization has at hand to give their workers the best information about what they anticipate the work to be.
And the map's important, but the map's not the terrain.
The map is not the terrain.
The terrain is very different.
The terrain is always different than the map.
The map. So there we go. Yes. So okay. So then the question is if I'm sitting in a company, I'm a construction company in Phoenix.
Right.
What should my pre-job look like? If you could go in tomorrow and help them actually do better pre-jobs, what would you do and how would you do it? Would you visit for a day and watch them, then come in and actually help tweak their pre-job? Would you help prototype some new ideas? What's that look like for you?
Well, when I talk to those folks that are doing that kind of stuff, I say, I watch them and they very diligently complete their pre-job, and I ask them, how useful is this to you? And generally speaking, it's pretty useful, because they know it's required, they know it's compliant, they know it gets everybody on the same page and gives them a pause before the work. But I said, when the work actually takes place, how important is this document? And I think the map analogy is great. It can get me. Like, I use, Siri and Google Maps just like everybody else.
And I use Waze.
Oh, Waze is really good.
I'm a Waze guy.
And Waze is from Israel.
I know. It's an Israeli app.
And it did get some Israeli army accidentally into a Palestine border issue.
So maybe not the best. And didn't Google buy it?
Oh, I don't know.
I think Google bought it.
Really?
Yeah, I think. Not that that's bad or good. I just think that happened.
So it'll get me to, the destination is on your left, and often the destination is on my left, but there is a Jersey barrier or a fence or a protest or a dead animal on the dirt road, whatever, between me and the destination. And that's where the improvisation and adaptation takes place. And so, yeah, I think it's good to look at, all of our policies, procedures, and even that formalized pre-job as, map aids that get us to the place where we have to make it that last few, steps or miles to get to the actual destination.
But you're working with this, right? I mean, you can really help a company almost immediately improve this process.
Well, the last group I work with, fantastic people, we put up an example of their pre-job brief, and there were a lot of really good discussion points on that pre-job brief. And then I just kind of broke them into groups, and we had that discussion about, between the completion of the pre-job briefing formal activity and the beginning of the actual work, everybody's on the same page. And then minutes later, things start to change, and they change throughout the day, and you adapt, and you make the difference. I'm like, how are we capturing that? And that was the interesting thing about the employees. So what keeps you safe? What really gives you the value? And the response is pretty much, we need these rules, but we're really familiar with the rules because we go through them every single day, and we have fidelity to them because they're good and they make sense. But the actual work takes place in these moment-to-moment, discussions as we're actually doing the work. And so I asked them, well, can you just kind of get together and come up, if you were going to design your own just verbal pre-brief, if it was a perfect world and nobody had to write anything down and we certainly don't live in that world, what would it look like? And they basically came down with the four or five questions. Here's what I think the situation is. Here's what I think we ought to do about it. Here are the things that I'm afraid of that we need to pay some more attention to. Here's what I think we should do. What do you think? And then with crews that are, have some constancy with themselves and, hierarchy and hopefully some mutual respect. And most of these people who work every day do. They know better than anybody what their crew fitness is for the task of the day.
Yeah.
When they have those discussions and the most junior person on the team is comfortable to speak up and participate, that's where a lot of really good stuff happens.
Can companies contact you?
Sure.
How?
At my email address, mark.yeston@gmail.com.
Okay. And they should, right? I mean, it's a good thing to do.
Yeah. I love talking easy. About this stuff, and it's fun. And workers are, they get it. They understand.
And it's an easy place to have dramatically effective impact with not very much. I mean, it's not expensive to change the pre-job.
No, it's not expensive. And you can make some minor adjustments to the pre-job, but you can really let workers know that the actual that distance between the pre-job and the actual work is where a tremendous amount of learning happens and a tremendous amount of, you know, capacity is derived and a tremendous amount of thought and skill and experience is brought to bear. And if we're not, you know, out sharing that and telling those stories, then we're not getting much better.
This didn't suck, did it?
No.
God, you acted like this was really going to be painful.
Well, until I found out you had the M&M machine here in the studio.
And that made everything better?
M&Ms make everything better, Todd.
Ah, there we go. Thank you, Mark.
Thanks, Todd.
Peace. So there you have it. What'd you think? I told you, it's a really good podcast. It's certainly worth your time. Thanks for listening. If you want to get a hold of Mark, here's my advice. I'd actually hook him up. I would call him in. It's such an easy thing to look at. It's almost immediately impactful, and you all do them all the time. And they have, over time, drifted to weaponized, if I can coin Mark's term. They've certainly drifted to compliance documents, and they're no longer thinking documents. Just think it over. I mean, it's a great place to look. You know, anything you need, Mark will give you. It's fine. Everything's covered there. Until then, thanks for listening, though, and stay tuned, will you? Tell all your friends, do whatever it takes to get people to listen to the podcast. Subscribe, because that makes a huge difference. Review the podcast, because that seems to be very important to me. That's what they tell me. They send me emails that say, be sure to have people review the podcast. So I ask you, if you get a chance, review the podcast. For goodness sakes, give it a good review. I mean, if you're going to do a bad review, review someone else's podcast. That's what I'd say. Until then, learn something new every single day. I bet you did today. Have as much fun as you possibly can, and for goodness sakes, be safe.